From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, July 12th, 2019. The city of Portland has made arrangements to move several asylum seekers from emergency shelters in the city to private housing in Brunswick. Brunswick administrators say they're expecting up to 40 of the new arrivals who've come to Portland in recent weeks after entering the U.S. at the southern border. More than 250 asylum seekers are staying in an emergency shelter inside the Portland Expo building, but the shelter's only available until mid-August. Portland Communications Director Jessica Grondin says a developer offered the Brunswick housing rent-free for a period of time, but she says the city of Portland will continue to ensure that services like food, education, and health care are provided to the families.
It's those kinds of services that we need to make sure are still accessible for folks. We certainly just don't want to move families and not have them have the resources that they need to be able to, you know, be here and thrive.
Portland has budgeted about $200,000 in its community support fund to assist asylum seekers and has raised an additional $800,000 through donations. The city says it can accommodate about 110 people in overflow shelters, but expects to need to find housing for about 150 people over the next month. The Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention is investigating a cluster of six Legionnaires' disease cases in the Bangor area. Of those, all six patients were hospitalized and one died, although it's not clear if the Legionella bacteria was to blame. The CDC says there's been about one diagnosis in each month since last November, and officials are trying to determine if they are related. And the House version of the National Defense Authorization Act, which sets defense policy for the next year, contains several proposals sponsored or co-sponsored by 1st District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree. Mal Leary has more.
Pingree was successful in amending the legislation with a provision aimed at protecting military personnel who report sexual harassment and ensuring that the Veterans Administration informs them of their rights and benefits. Other amendments co-sponsored by Pingree authorized destroyer construction at Bath Iron Works and submarine overhauls at Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. The House and Senate must now reconcile the differences in their two versions of the measure. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
In weather tonight, mostly cloudy with some fog in the valleys and lows in the mid-50s to mid-60s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs in the low 70s to mid-80s, coolest north and down east. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, lows in the mid-50s to mid-60s.
This past week on Maine Calling, Monday, asylum seekers in Maine. Tuesday, all about blueberries.
Prices have gone down because more and more people want to eat blueberries all over the world.
Wednesday, protecting internet privacy.
Based upon your demographics, we're going to be doing targeted advertising.
Thursday, Maine's film scene. And Friday, 50 years since the moon landing. Maine Calling, online anytime at mainecalling.org.
On Monday, Maine Governor Janet Mills' administration will hold its first summit on addressing the opioid crisis. It'll bring together health providers, advocates, police, and other first responders, and people whose lives have been touched by opioid addiction. Journalist Sam Quiñones will be a keynote speaker at the summit. His 2015 book, Dreamland, The True Tale of America's Opiate Epidemic, tells the story of how a combination of legal and illegal drug marketing and changing attitudes toward pain management laid the groundwork for the crisis in America. I spoke with him via Skype.
We arrived at the point where we are today because of initially a push to transform how we treated pain, and in treating pain, the greater, far more aggressive use of narcotic painkillers for all manner of pain, a variety of ailments, and in many, many people, regardless of their background. So as time went on, people got addicted to these drugs and a lot of them switched to heroin, not everyone, but a good number got it, switched to heroin. Along the way with the pills, and then of course with heroin as well, you began to have increasing overdoses, people dying. And more recently, we've seen that heroin has been crowded out by the underworld's use of a drug called fentanyl, which is another, it's an opioid that is synthetic, and that has even further increased the death toll.
Now, this book came out in 2015. How have things changed since then?
First of all, in the negative, you have, as I said, an expansion of this drug called fentanyl, which is actually a legitimate painkiller used in surgeries a lot, and sometimes in the use of chronic pain in modern medicine. It's been discovered by the underworld as a very, very cheap, therefore enormously profitable substitute for heroin. But it's also extraordinarily potent and therefore very, very deadly. And that is what has motored the death toll the last few years, is really fentanyl. On the positive side, I would say that we are seeing an enormous expansion of awareness in this whole problem. Early on, when I was writing my book, there was a deafening silence surrounding this problem. Nobody wanted to talk about it. It was very much like the early days of the AIDS epidemic. Everyone wanted to hide it and so on. It was very difficult to find families who wanted to talk about this in public. And since the book's come out, I think what's happened is an enormous new awareness. People are feeling the courage to come out of the shadows. The obituaries are telling the truth. You're seeing enormous expansion of lawsuits against drug companies, which was never the case when I was doing the book. And so you're seeing at the same time the enormous death toll rising, you are also seeing Americans kind of wake up to this problem and begin to work together on it.
You mentioned these lawsuits, and we have just gotten news of another very big settlement. But are the lawsuits changing anything?
I would say that what is happening is just the mere fact of the number of lawsuits is doing a few things. First of all, it's bringing out the full story, a much fuller story than I was able to get being just one freelance writer. I would say also that increasingly drug companies are seeing that they need to be proactive, that maybe they got a little complacent by beating down too many very vulnerable clients or plaintiffs without a lot of power to them. And they thought that they could kind of get away with a lot that I don't think they're now able to get away with. And so you're seeing the companies react. A lot of times it's far less, with far less arrogance, frankly, than they displayed like in the late 90s, early 2000s. So these changes are happening, but the full effect of the lawsuits and the hundreds and hundreds of lawsuits that have piled up, I'm not sure we're going to see that for a while yet.
If I go to the doctor today and I say, I have pain, what can you do for me? What's likely to happen?
If you go to a doctor who actually has a lot of training in pain management, that doctor, I would hope, would be able to prescribe you a wide array of treatments, opioids being one of them, but only part of the mix. Also physical therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy and exercise and diet and so on and so forth. The problem is nowadays that one of the key elements that got us into this, we still have not addressed, and that is the fact that too often insurance companies do not reimburse for a whole lot of pain treatments that do not involve opioid painkillers. So it's kind of hit and miss. And some doctors without a lot of training in pain management have chosen just to shut people down, just to stop prescribing or just refuse patients. That doesn't... That's very cruel. It also sends people into the black market looking for their pain meds. Chronic pain patients still do not have a wide smorgasbord of treatments from which to choose from and to use together, all together in concert, that insurance companies will reimburse for. Some HMOs are doing that, but I think too often you're still finding out there that doctors don't have many tools for the patient who comes before them and says, I have chronic pain.
Sam Quiñones is the author of the book Dreamland, The True Tale of America's Opiate Epidemic. He'll be a keynote speaker at Monday's 2019 Maine Opioid Summit in Augusta. Sam Quiñones, thanks a lot for talking to me.
It's my pleasure. Thanks very much.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Have a great weekend. I'm Nora Flaherty.